Assalamu alaikum, everybody, and welcome back to Puckcord. Today, I have a very exciting and in-depth discussion with Hira Heather, 26-year-old journalist based in Toronto, Canada. Hira writes for 5 online lifestyle publications and is also a broadcast journalist for Hum TV Canada. She became especially well-known after her rapid-fire interviewing format on Twitter, called Hira Heather's 7 Qs, went viral with responses from celebrities like Ali Zafar, Myra Khan, Ahdraz Amir, and many more. In this episode, Hira will talk about many things, including a brief introduction to her life journey and how she got to where she is today, along with some motivational tips for aspiring listeners. Hira and I also discuss several other topics, with her viewpoints being the focus, of course. Topics including depression and anxiety, inequities in the Muslim world today, challenges of growing up abroad while maintaining cultural and religious roots, stories around her interactions with various celebrities, including Atif Aslam, and her views on feminism, as well as the Aurat March, which just took place in March of this year. So, without further ado, here's Hira Heather with a brief introduction to herself.
Well, so now the thing is that when anybody asks me, where am I from? It sort of gives me flashbacks of the places where I've lived, although it's always been transitioning between Canada and Dubai, but it's happened so often that I really don't know where to say that exactly I belong from, because I feel like half of me is Canadian, half of me is Dubai, but of course a big chunk of me is Pakistani. So I was born in Abu Dhabi and I lived there till the age of 3. Then my family and I, we migrated to Canada, and I lived here for around like up till I was 13 and then moved back to Dubai. Now, I always say that my childhood was absolutely beautiful because I'm a big family girl. I have 3 younger siblings, 2 younger sisters and a younger brother, and very easygoing and pleasant parents. So it's always been a blast with the family. And so childhood, mashallah, was absolutely amazing. I was always very close to my Pakistani culture. I mean, I still remember at the age of like 8 and 9, I would love to watch old PTV dramas like Tanhaiya and Ankahi. And I think that's where my Urdu sharpened a lot, although my mom would always focus on all the kids speaking in pure Urdu. So at the age of 13, my family and I, we moved to Dubai because my dad's a businessman and opportunities were blooming at that time. So yes, I started grade 8 at Cambridge International, my high school. I call that place home. And of course, then after that, I graduated and I went to the American University of Sharjah, another extremely prestigious school in the Gulf. And I graduated with a degree in journalism from there.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, that's basically a quick background.
Okay, so you came to Toronto at the age of...
I came to Toronto when I was 3 years old.
3. Okay. I'm just getting the timeline right. I see.
Yeah. And then at the age of 13, I moved back to Dubai.
Back to Dubai. Okay. Got it. And then you finished college there.
Exactly. And then I moved back to Canada again.
Okay. Yeah. What prompted your latest move back? Was it a career or something else?
No, it wasn't. We decided to move as a family because my younger siblings, they're just... 2 years apart from one another. So they were all about to start university at the same time. And of course, we have always been very well off financially, but my parents are very smart with the way they spend their money. And they said that the best way to spend money on education would be when we return to Canada, because we are Canadian citizens and education would be much more affordable in comparison to Dubai. I mean, that is a struggle that my parents and my entire family faced when it came to me, because the American University of Sharjah, like I said, it's one of the top universities within the Middle East. And it is so exorbitant that, I mean, I was spending around 80,000 dirhams per year, which was tuition free.
Wow.
Yeah. Now I'm terrible at math, so I'm going to leave that for everyone else to do.
The conversion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that was definitely a very big reason. And I'm actually sort of glad that I did come back to Canada, because I feel like Dubai, of course, Dubai will always be home. It's got a big part of my heart there. But when it comes to being practical, I feel like Canada is more of a place where human rights are considered, where basic human needs are considered, and people are accommodated in the best way possible, regardless of their faith or their creed or class.
Yeah, I hear that a lot about Dubai, actually, from people who've lived there.
Definitely.
Although I always try to get to the bottom of it because I've never lived there myself.
Huh.
So to me, it's all like glamour and, you know, glitters. It looks
great
beautiful.
Great place for a vacation, but very difficult.
For visiting, yeah.
Yeah, but very difficult to maintain a good lifestyle there.
Yeah. Is it because of the inequities, you think, among like different types of people? Or is it just the way that the governmental structure is set up or the employment structure?
I would say that everything you've just mentioned is definitely a big part of it. Mm. Definitely. Because there is discrimination according to faith, unfortunately. Mm. And there is also a lot of favoring when it comes to which nationality you belong to. Because see, like I said, my family were Canadian citizens. And before we moved to Dubai, we already had our nationality. So my mom is an English language teacher and she's worked in one of the top schools in Dubai. She would get paid higher because she is a Canadian national in comparison to other teachers who were, let's say, Pakistani nationals or Indian or belonging to any other country which is not a Western country.
That would make sense. So it's very hierarchical.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
Right. It's kind of unfortunate that I think at least Dubai is one of the, in terms of all the Muslim majority countries and which ones are the highest covered in mainstream Western media, Dubai definitely comes out on one of the top ones, as one of the top ones in terms of like places where people vacation from all over the world, right?
Absolutely.
We have those types of strange inequities when we're over here in Western society fighting for our rights, right? In our own societies, we're not able to give those rights to people.
Definitely.
Strange paradox.
In fact, it is because I would definitely say that when I see, I can't speak much for the US, of course, because I've never lived there and I don't really have much family there, but I can speak about Canada, of course, that people are given equal rights, which is strange because, again, it's not a Muslim country. Whereas if, when you look at other Muslim countries, such as Saudi Arabia, which is called the epitome of Islam, that's what the country represents. We see a lot of inequality there. And it's quite unfortunate because I feel like if a country is representing Islam on a whole, and if there are injustices happening in that country, and when the Western media covers Saudi Arabia for the injustices that are ongoing, then the world does perceive Islam as faith which is not just, which is quite the opposite of what Islam truly is.
Absolutely agree with you. And speaking for the US, you know, one particular thing that comes to mind is, do you know about the Asia Bibi case?
Oh, yes, definitely, definitely.
It's been ongoing since 2011. So that was kind of it was a very divisive issue over here, especially. I ran into a lot of Pakistanis within family, you know, distant family or friends of family, and they are leaning liberal in terms of their policy preferences over here in the US because liberal values protect minorities. Liberal values allow us freedom of speech and, you know, freedom to wear what you want and practice what you want, especially over here. So that's great. But then in terms of where Pakistan should be, they were conservative. So they supported, for example, to some extent, laws that discriminate minorities, you know, or were used unjustly against minorities. For example, the blasphemy law, which might have good intentions, but it's often misused to trap people, especially poor Christians and Hindus living in Pakistan. I found that really unfair.
Definitely.
Anyway, the overall thing that I was seeing, the overall pattern of people over here, Pakistani descendants, were the conservatism in their minds of how Pakistan should be. You know, Pakistan is fine the way it is. Leave it alone. But over here, we want rights and we want equality and we want those things.
Definitely.
Strange hypocrisy.
Definitely. And I feel like people within Pakistan and Pakistanis outside of Pakistan, and let's talk about Muslims in general, that when you are fighting for something, when it comes to truth and justice, or when you are giving decisions about what should be done and what shouldn't be done, if you are doing it in the light of Islam, then you should do it with knowledge. If you do not have knowledge about our faith, about your own faith, then do not use faith as a weapon. See, when we look at Asia Bibi's case, I feel like if we turn back and think that would Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam have done this, if this is what would have happened, is this how he would have gone about things? If we start thinking in this way, then not only will we be able to better our own selves as Muslims, but we would also be able to aid those people who are in actual need.
You know, here, one of the arguments that I've heard of, actually, that will counter yours is, would the Prophet have done this? The response sometimes I've seen is, no, he would not have, but we will do it because we're, you know, we're not the Prophet. We're not perfect like him. So kind of a strange response.
That's a very ignorant response, but okay, to themselves then.
Yeah, he was perfect, but we're not perfect. We love him too much, so we will do what we want. We have a lot to think about, I think, as a as a collective diaspora. But that's definitely one of the highly divisive issues.
absolutely.
Anyway, so after you graduated, I wanted to learn more about how you got to where you are.
Mm-hmm. So now I have probably just vaguely spoken about this on my own personal Instagram. I have never spoken about this to any other platform, whoever has featured me. And I feel like this was just saved specifically for Popcord. Now, a lot of people, when they look at my life post-graduation, there is a period during that time where people see that I was completely missing within my immediate social circle, within my social circle, even external to my immediate one. Because like I said, I'm a very social person. And I would socialize all the time. So when I moved to Canada, which was a very, very difficult time for me, because I, at the age of 22, 23, I moved to a country, which fine, I spent my childhood in, but it was still a stranger land. Yeah. Having spent my high school and university life in Dubai, my entire social circle was there. My entire life was there. My lifelong best friends were there. My whole culture, which I was used to, was in Dubai. So to completely root myself out of that and come to Canada, despite the extremely supportive and loving and caring family that I have, it was a trauma. It definitely was, because I had to start from scratch. And yes, I did go through depression. I did go through anxiety. And that is when I discovered that mental health, which people speak about, I actually learned it through experience that, yes, this is what it is. And I probably would not have been able to survive those first few months in Canada without my mother. She's a master's in psychology. And not only that, she's an extremely empathetic woman, very, very different from how majority of brown parents are. And I'm not putting brown parents down, but I feel like brown parents need to educate themselves about mental health, because I'm probably not the only one who goes through these issues. But my mom was there by my side, and she did everything possible to keep me sane. And I feel like that is the reason that I am where I am today, because she's the one who's always pushed me towards doing better, towards giving it a shot. You know, when I feel like giving up, she doesn't let me give up no matter what, no matter how big of a fight we have. She goes like, nah, I'm not letting you give up at all. So all my successes are because of her. So during that time, of course, I was very depressed. It took me a very long time to come back to my usual chirpy self. But when I did, I got an opportunity to intern with Eligible Magazine. It's a lifestyle magazine here. And I enjoyed it thoroughly. But I felt like lifestyle journalism, okay, that's great. It is my thing for sure, more than hardcore news. But I don't just want to write about fashion or, you know, dating relationships. I want to write about things that impact people in a deeper way. And so one night I was thinking about all of this, and I was thinking that, you know, how can I make a difference to people? And I thought to myself while scrolling through Twitter that, wow, look at all these celebrities. Look at the way that they make a difference to people. And I wish I could interview them and, you know, bring forth their personalities, which will impact the audiences in a better way. At that very same moment, I saw that Ali Zafer, he tweeted a tweet, a random one. Now, at that time, I used to be a fan of his, and because I grew up listening to his songs, all of that stuff. So I tweeted him and I was like, wow, you know, I would love to interview you someday. And it was an arrow in the dark at 3 a.m. in the morning. And I was just about to set my phone down when I got a notification that he's replied. And he said, 7 questions right here, right now. Shoot away.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so 3 a.m., groggy with sleep, where I had to wake up the next morning for work, I shot away all my questions, and those questions and that interview with Ali Zafer went viral. It was published all over across the world on multiple platforms. And
really?
Yes, through that, I realized that, you know, I think this is something which I can turn into a trend. And that's exactly what I did. The next morning, when I saw my phone blow up with over 1,000 notifications, I said that let's start this and try my luck again. That is when I tweeted to Aisha Khan and Faisal Qureshi in the same day. Now, a lot of people don't believe me, but I swear on my life that I would not prepare for these questions. It would be spontaneous on the spot. So Aisha Khan and Faisal Qureshi's Twitter interviews, I conducted simultaneously. So Aisha Khan was replying, then Faisal Qureshi replied, then I shot my question towards her and him, and I was going crazy because that wasn't the only thing that was going on. When I did these three interviews, I did not have a platform to publish these interviews on. I didn't know who I could approach. I had no platform whatsoever. But then again, that was my really lucky time, a great phase, alhamdulillah. And I had 5 separate online lifestyle publications approach me that we would love to publish your interviews, conduct as many more as you can, write as many articles as you can. And there was no turning back after that. And here I had their 7Q's Twitter interview was a trend. I still do it whenever I'm super bored and whenever I need that adrenaline kick. And again, it's made me realize that we need to take these celebrities as more than pretty objects. There's much more to them. And as a journalist, I feel like it's my responsibility to bring that forth.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's impressive. So 7 Qs, that's basically 7 questions. How did you come up with that idea?
Very spontaneously, to be honest, but there's a little bit of a speciality. The last question, the 7th one, I always give that a very personal, selfish touch because I always ask them that, you know, take out a pen and a piece of paper and write down your autograph and a message for me. And none of them have ever said no. Aliza Farooq wrote a poem for me. Aisha Umar drew my sketch with a beautiful message. Faisal Qureshi sent over a picture of like his daughter drew with like his sign. So, I mean, I've received some pretty beautiful gifts through that.
Yeah, it adds a little personal touch. Yeah, that's a pretty unique idea, actually. I like it. It's basically interviewing, like you said, but you personalize it. You give it your own name and you simplify it, right? It's 7 questions, no more, no less, so they know what to expect.
Definitely, definitely. No, I feel like that has been what has given me a lot of recognition because I feel like there is so much of content out there in the world that you need to find your personal flair and stick to it and not compromise on your individuality while you're pursuing your work.
Absolutely. So, where were you uploading these? On YouTube prior to them being published?
No, I wasn't publishing them. See, that's the thing. I had to be very smart, even though I was desperate to publish them. I wanted to share them on my Facebook, on my Instagram, but I was thinking that, you know, who can I approach? And the funny thing is that I had Mango Boz and Berlo write stories about me doing these interviews. So I thought, who else best than to approach them myself? So I approached Berlo, Mango Boz, a couple of other online platforms, and I told them that, you know, hey, I've got these interviews and I want to write up the articles and publish them. And they were like, oh, yeah, go for it. We'd be more than happy.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah, I'll have to check those out myself.
Curious
about the Aliza for one.
I'm sure a lot of people would be. But yeah, that was a turning point. And of course, then after a couple of months came Hum TV Canada. They were a startup at that point. Hum TV wasn't all that established in Canada, but I think the big bang that we were able to do was the 6th Hum Awards, where I was able to host the Hum TV Awards and the red carpet. And that was just something else for me. So it's honestly been no turning back since then.
Yeah, that's amazing. By the way, a side question, Hum TV Canada, what do they do separately from Hum TV overall and within Pakistan?
Well, right now we've got a couple of things in works. I cannot disclose that, but I hope that this is going to add a little suspense to people to, like, you know, keep up to date and keep watching out. But there's a lot of exciting stuff that is coming up. And the thing is that Hum Awards was, I mean, the ultimate Hum Awards that has ever happened. Why do I say this? Because, well, numbers speak, and there have not been enough people that have gone to Dubai or that have been there in Pakistan. I mean, Max, I was speaking to Fawad Khan, and what Fawad Khan said was that I got scared when I looked at the crowd. I mean, for a star like Fawad Khan to say that is something, because he said that in Pakistan, आप ज़्यादा से ज़्यादा मैक्सिमम जो लोगों को देखते हैं, वो 4,000 होते हैं. यहाँ पे मुझे समझ में नहीं आ रहा था कि मैं किसको कहाँ किस तरफ देखूँ. So yes,
Wow,
that
yeah.
was a big thing. And after that, of course, we realized that how strong the community truly is, and there's a lot more that we can do and that we will. Apart from Hub Awards, there have been multiple film premieres as well. For example, we've done Cake, Parvaz-e-Junoon, Shermeen Obaid-Chinoy had come, so we had participated as media in her event, conducted exclusive interviews. So yes, there are a lot of startups which are going to be happening very soon.
Yeah, I want to echo what you said about just giving a more personal voice to our celebrities, right? Because people often look at them through a certain lens and they forget that they have day-to-day family lives and kind
Of
of personal
course.
fears and challenges of their own. I think what you mentioned about Fuad Khan kind of relates back to some documentaries that I was watching about comedians, like famous comedians, you know, like Jerry Seinfeld, struggling to stand up in front of a crowd and struggling to make them laugh. And you
Definitely.
don't really see that because it's all behind the scenes, but they do talk about it. You just have to kind of read between the lines.
Absolutely. There are a lot of times where people ask me that, have you ever had an embarrassing moment with a celebrity or have you done anything stupid? And I'm like, you know what? Not really. Because I'm so focused on getting my job done that there's nothing else that's there on my mind that can distract me. Because journalism is my passion. So when I want to get my story, I will get it, regardless of whatever is happening or whoever is standing in front of me. But I always say this, that I have come across so many celebrities in such a short span of time that I have seen them have a lot of embarrassing moments themselves. And I've seen them be very human. And that makes me truly ponder over the fact that when these same celebrities are not making the most wise of choices, or when they are having their embarrassing moments, that the public, the masses judge them so crucially, and they forget that they are also human beings. They're just like us.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We were just talking the other day about how like a single tweet can hold you hostage, and that's happening all over the
Absolutely.
place now. We forget that celebrities, just like any other people, have voices and opinions of their own. The one big mistake they make is sometimes voicing that too vocally without, I guess, thinking of the repercussions, which isn't necessarily a mistake. It's just them being human. But we forget that. We think of them as these perfect beings that can make
Of
every single
course.
person happy, which isn't the case.
Of course, you're absolutely right. And another thing is that in today's time where everybody has social media, I feel like people feel that it's an absolute need. They have this urge that no matter what is happening, we must comment on it. You are not obliged to comment on every single thing that's ongoing. And if you truly desire to do so, do your research on that topic. For example, if there are things going on about the Me Too movement, do your research before you speak up about it. If there are issues happening about domestic violence, do your research about it and then speak up about it. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, what does come out of your mouth, it does define you.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you seen there's a show that Samina Pirzada does now called Speak Your Heart?
Of course, yes.
Yeah. She did an interview, I think a few months ago, with Atif Aslam, and that one was really amazing to me. Just the way that it added so much depth to Atif Aslam as a person, I think, beyond just him being a singer. I think I learned a lot about him. And again, it just kind of resonated with what you mentioned about him being more of a person with a journey and a story of his own.
I think every individual, especially of course, celebrities, when it comes to the media industry, I feel like there's a different kind of struggle. Each field has its own different kind of struggle, but the media industry, because may perhaps I'm a part of it as well, I can see the struggles that are there. It can put your mental health in shambles. It can affect your family life, your personal life, a lot of things. But the interview which you're speaking about, unfortunately, I have not watched it. But now that you've said it, I definitely will, because I do have this attachment with Atif Aslam. Because of course, I mean, as a kid, I now the thing is that when I moved from Canada to Dubai, I was not familiar with Pakistani music at all. I mean, I used to listen to Avril Lavigne, Hillary Duff, Green Day, Bon Jovi, that sort of a
Nice.
thing. Exactly, exactly. You know, I had that Avril Lavigne phase as well, but let's not get to that at all. So Atif Assam and Aliza Fir both were both of the first singers who I came across. And what I personally truly admired about Atif Assam was that he has a very Sufi touch to his lyrics. And that is something which truly used to pull me towards him. And that's why I was a huge fan of his. In fact, I've got a very interesting story to share as well. So it was my third year university. And from Dubai, I was going to Lahore to do my internship in Dawn News. I had told my mom that I'm not going to do my internship in Dubai. I'm not going to be one of those city girls. I want to work hardcore, you know, in Lahore. I want to learn how things work in Pakistan and that too in Dawn News. I was super excited on the plane, just about to board the plane. You know, overexcited. Like I said, I'm a very chirpy person. So I look to my left into first class and I'm like, dude, I've seen this guy somewhere before. And he's talking on the phone and he's facing me. And I was like, I literally threw my hand carry to my mom and I'm like, take this, I'll be back. And my mom's like, what? So as soon as like I saw him, he actually like started to smile and he put his like finger on his lips to just be quiet. He was probably thinking that I'm gonna like scream or something,
right? And, right, yeah, cause trouble for him.
Exactly. But he shut his phone and he spoke to me and he's like, oh, it's your, you know, first time going to Lahore other than vacation, so that's really great because I'm from Karachi. So yeah, so he was like, you're gonna love Lahore and all of that. And now the thing is that whenever I see a celebrity, my intention is not that, oh, I want to get a picture with them or, oh my God, I can pick them off that I've met them. My intention is that I want to interview them. So I went to him and I'm like, you know what? A day is going to come where I'm going to interview you someday. And he's like, inshallah, it surely will. So flash forward a couple of years later, three, four years later, I met him again as Hum TV Canada's journalist at the Grand Hum Awards rehearsal. And that was something. And I just stood there. And when I met him, I was like, told you so. So that was amazing. So yes, Atif Assam, I've got a little bit of history, you can say.
With him, yeah, right. So he probably knows you. You know, certain things you don't forget.
I hope so. I truly hope so. Because, I mean, I've been very fortunate. I've come across some pretty kind-hearted people in the industry who I've become friends with. And again, that makes me realize that, you know, these celebrities, sure, they are celebrities, but at the end of the day, they are human.
Yeah, yeah, right. I agree with you on the Sufi part. I think in the beginning, I didn't have too much of an opinion with him when he first started making songs. I thought he was good, but I never thought too much about it. And then later on, I started seeing his journey and I felt like his voice started to change and he started evolving as a singer.
Absolutely.
In fact, at one point, I remember asking, like, did he take singing classes? Like, I knew he was a good singer before, but now he's like, you know, 10 times better. And it's just like I think he really gives it all, gives all of his energy into every song. And yeah, he's one of the people that's like massively loved across Pakistan, you know?
Absolutely.
He doesn't have any negative vibe around him. He's completely positive. Everybody loves him.
Not that I felt.
Yeah, I think he's a great guy. Yeah, going back to Ira, you touched on depression and mental health. I thought we could talk a little bit more about that. It seems like if I remember correctly, you're saying your depression kind of kicked in at the onset of moving to a new place. So there was some culture shock going on there at an older age. So I can imagine how difficult that must be. What do you recommend? You mentioned your mom really helped you get through it, but you know, not everybody. As you mentioned yourself, not everybody has parents, especially within Desi culture, who are super understanding of these types of people. Have parents who are depressed themselves, yet they don't understand what's happening to them.
For sure, for sure.
They don't think of depression as a legitimate disease. It's more of a, it's not a condition. It's more of a, just smile and you'll be fine. Or just tell yourself a few jokes and, you know, you'll be okay. They don't believe in, for example, therapy or medication or those types of things. Yeah. Have you thought anything around that?
Okay, so now the thing is that when I had left Dubai, the thing is that 6 months prior to me leaving, there were many traumas which I had to experience because my family experienced a financial crisis. And that was also one of the main reasons why we decided to move back to Canada.
Okay.
Because, of course, when you're experiencing a financial crisis, you can't afford to send three kids to university at the same time. Yeah. And I did experience PTSD. And I mean, I was very fortunate, again, that my mom was there. And in her own way, she would counsel me. But what I would recommend to other people is, first and foremost, that you hear about mental health all the time. It's everywhere. And it's quite fortunate for everyone in today's time that it is everywhere. It's being spoken about. It's on the internet. If you feel like you can relate to these symptoms, read further more on it. It's very important for you to understand what you are experiencing, number one. Number two, you need to confide in somebody who you trust. Communication, I know it's very difficult to communicate when you are depressed and there's a lot of anxiety that goes into it, but it helps. Two is trust someone, communicate with them. And number three would be that if nothing is helping you out, go see a doctor. When you are down with a flu, when you're down with a fever, when you are down with, okay, maybe a flu and fever are very common. When you're down with a bronchial cough, do not go to the doctor immediately to get that puff, to get your right injections through to lower down your fever. Why is it that ailments which are not physically seen, not given importance? Your mental health is also health. In fact, it's much more important, because why do we have PTSD? Why do we have it? Post-traumatic stress disorder. It's because whatever we're going through mentally, it comes out also into your physical body. Your body starts to ache. You feel like you can't move. It shows on your face that something is obviously wrong. That is why you do need a doctor when you feel like you are going through a mental health issue. So these three things, and just a little tip for everyone out there. Now, I know that this is a very common saying, and right enough, I agree with it, that to pray is not going to help your mental health. But for me personally, I feel like even before my mother, I feel like my spiritual connection with God and just knowing that the one and only power in this entire world can change life around is God itself. After building that connection, that spiritual connection, I feel like that gave me a lot of strength. And after that, I was able to, you know, actually be able to hold a conversation with my mom and listen to what she said. So I feel like your spirituality definitely plays a big part in you coping.
Right. A lot of people would say prayer alone is enough, but you already kind of mentioned that's not.
It's not. Definitely it's not.
Depending on the severity of your condition, it's not going to be necessarily the heal, but it can be a really strong and really powerful supplement.
Absolutely. You know what they say in Urdu, dawa aur dua ek saath chalti hai.
Yeah, yeah, perfect. Yeah, exactly.
So medication and prayer works together. It's a combination.
And really, even for people who don't pray, spirituality of any sort, whether you're meditating or you're praying or just sitting, you know, spending time not doing anything that's distracting you. How often do we really do that, you know? We're always looking at our phone screens. We're always looking at our laptops or computers or watching TV.
Unfortunately, despite the fact that we are given that opportunity to pray five times a day.
Exactly. How often do you just dedicate your time to clearing your head? And praying is a really powerful way to do that, actually.
Absolutely. Definitely. And, you know, it's not only that. Of course, being a journalist and being quite active on social media, it's a big part of my life. I would say that social media plays a big part in depression and anxiety and mental health issues.
Oh, yeah.
Why? Because you are being shown what other people want you to see rather than what is actually happening behind the scenes. I mean, sometimes when I used to, earlier on, before I've spoken about my struggles in life, my journey in life, people would always turn around and say, wow, you know, she's got such a glamorous and happening life. Great family, great friends, great career, but they didn't know what was going on behind the scenes. And once they realize that, you know, then they look at my journey in another way. And I feel like that's what happens with people on a daily basis. I mean, you can see somebody having the grandest time on social media, whereas they're actually truly lonely and depressed in reality. So this comparison that, you know, their life is better than mine is always something that affects mental health a lot. And that's the advice which I would want to give to every listener out there right now is that if you feel like you are in a terrible place mentally at the moment, cut yourself off of social media if that's what's making you feel horrible. If you feel like people are moving forward in life and you're just stuck in one place, stop looking at their lives. Stop. Focus on yourself, focus on what's going to do you good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen people do that too, actually. The two most common reasons that I hear actually from people for shutting down their social media accounts is number one, my finals are coming up. Or number two, it's, I just want to get some time away from people and their feeds and whatnot. And oftentimes that just comes from insecurity or this sense of like perfectionism that we get, that everybody's life is perfect, and but I'm going through all these challenges.
Of course, definitely, because that's what I went through when I moved to Canada. Because I had, like I said, my entire social circle was still in Dubai, and I stopped using social media. Somebody who uses it every day now, all the time.
Yeah.
I stopped using it completely because it was destroying my mental health. And I think that's what also played a big role in me healing myself and getting right back up on my feet. Alhamdulillah.
Yeah, yeah. I think one thing that really helps me, I guess anxiety and depression can be really tied together. Having a strong sense of humor, even when you're really down.
Yes. Oh,
it,
yes.
It's kind of proven, you know, the fake it till you make it with a smile thing is actually true. You can actually laugh or make humor of kind of sad, depressing situations, and they actually don't seem so bad after that. So it's a coping mechanism. It's not just a avoidance. It's actually a way to cope.
Definitely.
And have a more positive outlook on your life.
And you know, even if you can't do it yourself, it happens in my family. Like, of course, right now everyone's in their 20s, okay? So naturally, as four siblings, we're going through our own different struggles in life. And as Alhamdulillah, mashallah, the united family that we are, we all know that if there's anything that's never going to die down in our house, it's humor and like a pleasant mood that we always make sure is there. And a tactic that we do, and again, whoever's listening, do it because it really helps. Put on a funny movie. It just radiates positive vibes your way. You're
absolutely
laughing with your family. You forget everything. And yes, it doesn't change everything, but it helps.
Yeah,
it definitely does.
Absolutely. If you allow you, I've actually seen people sit and watch funny movies without even a smile. And then don't let themselves open up to, or giving themselves the chance to just be a little lighthearted for once. They don't want to give themselves the opportunity to do that. I think they're depriving themselves of that emotion sometimes. So it just takes a little bit of effort on your part too.
Absolutely. And we have to keep asking ourselves that, are we indulging in self-pity? Because that is the most dangerous thing that you can do. And that is just horrible. That's just never going to let you get where you want to be.
Hira, so the next thing I wanted to talk about is Pakistan. How often do you visit Pakistan? Have you been there a lot since you were born?
Well, yes, I have. I've spent majority of my childhood there. 3 months of summer vacations would be happening in Pakistan. And I mean, like I said, my family were from Karachi. So the thing is that, again, till we were in Canada, we would often visit a lot. However, after my immediate family, when we moved to Dubai, you can say my naniyal, my maternal side, they all moved to Dubai as well. They've lived in Dubai their whole lives. They were only in Karachi for a small period of time. So basically, my little mini Karachi was in Dubai itself. And it's been around 13 years that I have not been to Karachi. But I have this special attachment with Lahore because when my family was going through that financial crisis and my last 2 years in Dubai in university, my mom and my siblings were in Lahore. They chose to go to Lahore instead of Karachi because of safety issues. So, yeah. So over there, mashallah, they were very well settled. My mom was an English language teacher in LGS phase 5. My siblings were studying there as well. And of course, whenever I had university breaks, I would travel right down to Lahore. I have explored Lahore more than I have explored Karachi, and I have just this different love for the city. So yeah, a bit of, you can say that, yes, I've spent a lot of time in Pakistan, but I feel like the jazba that Pakistanis have living outside of Pakistan just makes you feel closer to home.
Wow, yeah.
Because they're trying so hard to, you know, hold on to their roots, to their culture, and they're trying so hard to, like, keep in line with everything that's happening. Yeah. And yeah, I would say that my patriotism does stem from my childhood memories and, of course, the kind of environment that I was raised in at home. But I would always say this, and I always do, that the Pakistani Cultural Club in AUS, which was a part of 80 other clubs at that university, truly instilled my patriotism into me. And in senior year, in fact, I was the vice president of the club as well. And just the activities that we used to do and how hard we used to strive towards, you know, embedding more of our culture into ourselves. There was so much of passion in it that it was just something else, that I feel more closer to my culture after being a part of that community.
Okay. Toronto has a pretty large Pakistani diaspora, right?
Oh, yes.
Now, is it mostly people who recently moved there from Pakistan, or is it kind of a mix?
So the thing is now, the province that I live in is Ontario, and Ontario, which is called the GTA, has different like cities in it. You can say town cities. So Mississauga is the core of the Pakistani community, I would say. There are Pakistanis spread across Ontario, but Mississauga, it's like a mini Pakistan. You have jot places, you have places for Chandrat where, oh my God, all the aunties will be nudging you to get the best churia. So it's like a full on Desi Mahal. And I adore that, because maybe Ramadan, maybe Eid, maybe any other religious festival during Muharram, you see Jaloos going out. It's brilliant to see that there is a lot of accommodation and there is a lot of inclusion of the Pakistani community in a country which is a Western country.
Yeah, I see a lot of that over here as well. Overall, people of Pakistani descent. I think there's some confusion here, though, in the U.S. I'm not so sure about Canada, but kids who are born in America, even though their parents are Pakistani and they try really hard to learn Urdu, there's a struggle overall which culture they should adopt more, you know? It's just easier to stick to what your peers around you are doing. So, for example, a lot of my younger cousins, they don't know a word of Urdu and they don't really express interest in Pakistani music or media or any of that.
I understand where you're coming from, and I do see a lot of this in Canada as well. And I'm sorry to say, but I would blame parents for that, because they've deprived their children of such a beautiful culture. And again, I mean, my younger siblings and I, we were raised here till our, like, as soon as we hit our teenage years, like I was 13, and we were very close to our Pakistani culture. Our parents made sure that, you know, we would speak in Urdu at home. We would be close to our values. Of course, they told us that, you can't be pure Pakistani when you're living in a country like Canada.
Of course.
I mean, of course, we had interests. Like, we would watch Full House, That's So Raven, Lizzie McGuire. But then alongside, we would also also watch Tanhaiya and Ankahi and the funny Omar Sharif stage plays as well. So I think it's the parents' responsibility to strike that balance. And that balance can only be struck if parents build a relationship with their children.
Absolutely. Your
children will not learn things on their own. You have to become their friend and teach them.
Because I do see parents who had this happen to their kids, right? And it's not like the parents did not try. Some parents do, and they care very much, and they're concerned about, you know, which direction their kids are heading and the lack of interest in their own background, in their own skin color, right? Where did I get this from? Their kids don't even express any of that interest. And it's not out of lack of caring from the parents' behalf, but it's more, they fail to kind of understand their kids a little bit more, have some kind of a friendship-related bond with their kids.
That's where everything starts.
There was always this weird separation somewhere,
Definitely.
And that's, at some point, you know, kids started looking more towards their peers, more up to their peers.
That's very understandable. And that's why I always, I mean, I'm just 26 right now, and I give this parenting advice, which is so funny because I am nowhere near married. But like, I mean, it's very evident because I've seen how my parents have raised four kids in their house, four like kids who are very close to each other in terms of age as well, that you don't build a relationship with your child when they're like 12 or 13. You start building that relationship with your child when they're three or four. You have to let them know that we are there for you through everything. Join with them when they're doing their activities. I still remember my mom used to sit with us while watching Lizzie McGuire or That's So Raven. And when some things would, of course, contradict the values, maybe cultural or Islamic, that she would see in those shows, she would just very lightheartedly, you know, walking here and there casually, she'd be like, oh, you know, this thing isn't all that right according to our culture or our faith, guys.
Yeah.
It's very different. And these are the small little factors that would stay in our mind. And I think that's what made us closer to our culture, because our parents have never hid from us that this is the bad in the world, so let's hide this from the kids, or this is a wrong in terms of contradiction to our religion or culture. They've told us that this is what happens in the world, but it's not acceptable within the circumference of our faith, first and foremost. Culture is another thing. But I think that is what carries on from a very young age up till adulthood.
Yeah, because you're living and you're growing up in Canada or the US, for example, you know, you're obviously going to express some level of interest in the media over here because you want to relate to the kids that you're going to school with, right? You don't want to be a complete outcast.
Obviously.
Yeah, you have to expose yourself to some of that. But just the understanding that this is great material to watch, to know how other people do it, to appreciate other cultures, but it's not necessarily our way of doing things, you know?
Very true.
That's a great distinction to have if parents can do that effectively. Rather than, you know, like you said, we're not parents yet, but we can still learn a lot just comparing parenting strategies.
For sure.
Of our friends and how they turned out and ourselves and how we turned out, you know?
Definitely.
That's what's going to help you when it's your turn. The cycle continues. Hopefully it's a continuously improving cycle from here.
Inshallah, hopefully.
As a woman, any specific challenges that you had as a woman that you might want to share with others, or even feedback that you might have to give on the Women's March, the Aurat March that just recently happened in Pakistan? I think it really struck waves because it's so new there, right?
Definitely. Going back to the first half of your question, if I had any challenges or not, well, okay. So when I was in second year in university, I was 19 and I kickstarted my career as a TV broadcast journalist for K2 TV, which was aired internationally. It was the first bilingual channel in Pakistan. Now, at the age of 18, you're very raw, big dreams. I had big, big dreams of being a journalist. So when I went, and of course, I was studying simultaneously as well. I had to juggle a lot and I was learning a lot about the world, may it have been academically or real life through the career path, which I had just chosen. Now, one struggle, which happened during the first episode, which never happened ever again, was that I was told that, you know, girls are so trippy and they're so bubbly. And, you know, when we put on a song, just like, you know, move a little bit on your chair and just show that. I told them flat out that I respect your opinion because you guys are my seniors, but I am sorry. I refuse to be eye candy for this channel, which was a very bold thing for me to say as a 19-year-old who's no one when it comes to being a journalist. Of course, only 19. Yeah. Merely in second year university. I mean, who was I to be setting conditions?
Right.
The young girls listening out there, when it comes to your values or your self-respect or your image, you are the boss. Nobody else is. A lot of people think that to be in the media industry, you have to dumb yourself down. You have to act a little cute. You have to be glamorous. Not at all. All of these things go in the background. The thing that is going to make you last is your pure talent and your intellectualism. Because let's face it, no matter how cute or adorable you act on television, people are going to change the channel if you're speaking rubbish. Let's just say that. Sure, a pretty face is a treat to everyone. But at the end of the day, you're a woman. Do not count on your looks to send messages across. There's so much more to you than that. Don't devalue yourself based on just merely your looks. That. And as for the Aurat March, now, I am all for it. I am all for the cause. I am all for majority of the signs that were up there. However, there were a lot of signs which I was completely against. I feel like we can talk about a lot of issues in a very decent and respectful manner. Just because women have to experience vulgarity does not mean that they have to respond with vulgarity. A woman's core value when it comes to empowerment is her grace and courage to take life forth and forward. Now, the thing is that Pakistani women or women in Pakistan, I feel like, are very confused when it comes to the concept of feminism. They feel like you have to dress a certain way, speak a certain language, cuss in a certain way. Apologies, but this is the reality. This is what they're confused with, that you have to be this to show that you are empowered. I strongly do not believe in that because I feel like, may it be in shalwar kameez, or may it be in a pair of jeans and t-shirt, you can still be empowered. Even if you're speaking purely in Urdu, you can be still as empowered as a woman speaking in fluent English. May you be a house worker, domestic help, or may you be the CEO of a company or a highly reputed actress. They can both be empowered. So looking at these small little things, the outer appearance of one another as women, do not judge that and do not say that this woman is empowered because she's like that. Number one. Number two, again, the vulgarity factor. A lot of people might not agree with me, but I strongly believe that if you want to put a message across, make it a message as such that nobody can contradict that. And this is something that my professor from the American University of Sharjah, Professor Gibbs, he taught me this tactic as a journalist. He said that if you want to be a good journalist, write in a way, in a neutral yet opinionated way, that people are not going to be able to contradict what you have to say. Be so factual. So I feel like this is another thing that the women need to understand, that you can put your message across, but put it across in a way that your message reaches people. It shouldn't be that the negativity or the ill comments that can come across with it are what comes forward and your message is completely in the background.
Right, right.
And another thing that, yes, Pakistan is doing great for itself, but a lot of women from the class which they belong to, sure, you're holding up placards, you're doing a great job, you're putting yourselves out there to empower other women by raising these issues. But how are you empowering those women who are not privileged? Your domestic house help, those underprivileged girls who cannot receive an education.
The ones who could not show up to the march.
Exactly. Right. What are you doing for them? If you are going out there for the march, when you come back home into your air-conditioned rooms, and when you set your placards down, and when you're uploading your pictures on Instagram, there are still girls out there, young girls. I mean, not even out there. There are still young girls working within your home who are sleeping in the worst of conditions in the quarters, in the servant quarters, as they're called. And I'm speaking from experience because, like I said, I have been to Pakistan back and forth quite a lot. And I've seen this, that privileged women are standing up for women's rights. But what are you practically doing for those who are in need of it? So great, you've done your bit, you've done the aurat march. Ab aap auraton ke liye kya kar rahe hain? Un auraton ke liye jinko waqai mein aapki zarurat hai.
Outside of just trying to get likes on Instagram or upvotes.
Definitely.
Or retweets on Twitter, right? There's a lot more that you can do behind the scenes that you might not really get reputation for. I think that's a real test.
For sure.
Yeah, I think it was an amazing march nonetheless. It's great that we even did it, that we're getting these conversations going and we're kind of intensifying them. I think it's it was great. Like you said, there were some signs that not everybody will agree with, right?
Definitely. And I'm happy that people raised their voices about this because I would not want the younger generation to get confused.
Yeah. I mean, you and I are talking about it right now. It's because there was content that we could discuss, right?
For sure.
From that march. So for better or worse, I think it was more on the better side, like even with some of the negativity that might have sparked out of there or some backlash or whatnot. But for the most part, it became hopefully a growing and more positive movement.
Definitely, hopefully.
I think to add to what you said on the concept of feminism is a little confusing within Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in a position to talk about it completely or make any assertions under the understanding that I'm not a woman, right? I can't make any assertions around that. But one of the things that I found really interesting was there was one image that I saw, and it was actually shared by Mango Boss as well. It was a woman wearing a niqab and a full burqa, and she was holding a sign saying, "Mere kapde, meri marzi." I actually put that on our story as well.
I remember.
One of the things that really resonated to me around that is how different our definition of feminism could be against the, you know, mainstream Western definition.
Absolutely.
Considering that many branches over here, they consider the burqa or the hijab or the niqab, they consider those symbols of oppression. So in their view, it's not about a woman's choice to wear what they want, which I think would be the right definition of feminism. But for them, it's more like, no, you don't wear those because those are apparently a symbol of oppression, even if the woman says herself that she is doing this out of her own decision.
I absolutely agree with you. In fact, I feel like this is a way of sort of brainwashing the East. And it's really, really interesting that you have brought this topic up, because I also host a faith-based show and it's shot from Toronto itself. And I actually changed my topic completely around for this week's shoot, and it is going to be centralized around women empowerment and Islam. The thing is that, again, like I said, that our youth and people, Muslims, need to do their research about faith. So many things will become easier in life. So many things. Now, when I did my research on women empowerment and in Islam, I realized that there's no faith in this world which has empowered women more than Islam. The thing is that culture has completely distorted it. Completely. I'll give you an example. When we talk about Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam's daughter, Bibi Fatima al-Zahra. She was, first of all, educated. She was given an education. She was an intellect. She was married to Hazrat Ali ibn Abi Talib, who is known to be the epitome of intellect. And Hazrat Ali had always said that if Fatima was not created, I would not have a companion for myself when it comes to intellectualism, which is a big thing. Imagine how intellectual that woman must have been. Yeah. She would advise all of the women across Arabia on their social issues. When it came to political issues, she, in her full hijab, niqab, went with Prophet Muhammad and Hazrat Ali and the companions and her two sons to stand up for those rights. When the issue of Fadak, again, these are historical issues which had happened, historical instances, if anybody wants, they're more than welcome to research. She went alone in the court and she asked for her right. So a woman in Islam, if she wants to see what her rights are, she can revert back to Bibi Fatima al-Zahra's life and look at all the things that she had done. She was even given the choice of marriage. Do you want to marry this person or not? There were plenty of proposals who she refused. Before she said yes to Imam Ali alayhi salam. So these are the factors that if women turn around and look back at this, they are in actual going to be empowered rather than get confused. For example, if you are doing housework, that doesn't make you beneath men. That's really sad to think that people think that if I'm heating up my husband's dish to eat, or if I'm heating up my brother's dish to eat, I'm beneath them. I'm not empowered. It's quite a shame. Yeah. I mean, I've got a younger brother who's just 18 right now. I do so much work for him, but in return, since I hate washing the dishes, he's going to wash the dishes. I don't really like mopping the floors. He'll mop the floors. So there's a sense of equality. If we bring faith into this, Islam into this, we'll realize that what true women empowerment is. And again, I feel like it can eradicate these regressive cultural norms that come with feminism.
Yeah. And you know, Hira, I think one of the targets that this is rightfully kind of pointed to, these types of memes and posts that people made, is often to those types of guys who will not even get a glass of water for themselves.
Oh, yes.
Even if it's even if it's 10 feet away. And those men, they do exist. I know them personally.
I know. And you know what, Habib? The problem is, the problem is women itself. Women need to empower women. Mothers and girls who are listening who will be mothers, treat your sons and daughters the same way. Do not make any difference.
Yeah, my sister and I were discussing this exact issue, and my sister pointed this out, that, you know, women are the biggest obstacle right now, especially moms can really differentiate between their sons and their daughters. And, you know, so this whole attitude of, you know, you're the girl, you should be doing everything he says, even though he's younger than you, or even though he's 10 feet away from the water fountain, go get him water or make him chai. You know, those that needs to change. And that does start from parenting. I agree with you.
Definitely. Definitely.
Some hilarious stories come out of it, but I think you've made some really great points. We need to align on what is our definition of feminism. And that's not saying that the hijab is the only way. That's not what we're saying. We're saying that the women have the right to choose. If you're not being forced to wear the hijab, you should do it out of your own decision.
Of course.
Out of your own choice. That more power to you. And if you don't want to wear it, more power to you. We don't turn against each other because we want to westernize ourselves blindly.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of the vulgar memes are also coming from literally being copy-pasted from a lot of Western content.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. And again, that goes into a very shallow understanding of these issues, which are centralized around women. I think women and young girls in Pakistan really need to educate themselves about these things. It's not just Women's Day where you're supposed to be empowering one another. It needs to happen every day.
Absolutely. I think it was a great start. I think you would agree to that.
Yeah, definitely.
I think this was maybe
Yes.
the second year of doing this. So we're on the right track, and inshallah, it'll be at a good place.
Inshallah, inshallah.
I mean, if you think about it, even talking about the women's issues, that's politics, but that's important stuff to discuss.
Absolutely, you can't be neutral.
Yeah, we need to do that outside of like the regular TV forums where you have like six people yelling at each other all the time.
Oh my God.
Kursiyan chal rahi hain,
My God, don't even get me started on that. And I mean, then उसके opposite अगर आप देखें तो जो morning shows पे औरतें होती हैं, like I would never want to be associated with such women. That's why I'm so strict about the stance that I have of myself in the media industry. No way can I act like those women on morning shows. That's just, it gives me anxiety. Ugh.
I don't even know how they do that. How they, मैं अपनी अम्मी को पूछता हूँ कि ये मॉर्निंग शोज वाली जो हैं, how do they produce content every single day, दो दो घंटे की शोज? Somehow they come up with ways to fill that time up.
Because it's with absolute rubbish. It's not with anything meaningful.
कहानियां डांस वगैरह कर लिया, ये लोगों को बुला लिया, बट
It's
इट्स प्रीटी इंप्रेसिव.
disgusting. It's very disgusting. आपने औरत को कितना स्टूपिड बना के पेश कर रहे हैं आप इंटरनेशनल टीवी पर यार. Thank you so much, Habib. Okay, great. Great talking to you.
Right.
Take care.
Thank you. Yep. Love
Okay,
is.
bye bye. Khuda hafiz.
Bye.